Don't you just want to rest in the beauty of that? On their way to get married, a young Roman Catholic couple is involved in a fatal car accident. The couple found themselves sitting outside the pearly gates, waiting for St. Peter to process them into heaven. While waiting, they began to wonder, could they possibly get married in heaven? When St. Peter showed up, they asked him. St. Peter said, "I don't know. This is the first time anyone has ever asked to get married in heaven. Let me go find out." And so he left to find out. The couple sat and they waited and they waited and they waited. 2 months passed and the couple were still waiting. And while they were waiting, they began to wonder what would happen if it didn't work out. Could they get divorced in heaven? And yet another month passed and St. Peter finally returned looking somewhat bedraggled. "Yes," he informed the couple, "you can get married in heaven." "Great," said the couple, "but we were just wondering, what if things don't work out? Could we also get a divorce in heaven?" St. Peter, red-faced with anger, slammed his clipboard onto the ground. "What's wrong?" asked the frightened couple. "Oh, come on," Peter shouted. "It took me 3 months to find a priest up here. Do you have any idea how long it'll take me to find a lawyer?" My apologies to any lawyers. Poor Peter. Even the afterlife is not so fair. During the season of Lent, we have been reflecting on David Rico's givens, the five givens in his book, The Five Things We Cannot Change. The first week, we reflected on the first given, everything changes and ends. Last week, we explored the second given, things do not always go as planned. And today, we're reflecting on the third given, life is not fair. I remember as a young child going to my rather stern lawyer father, by the way, and complaining that something wasn't fair. Probably whining about my brother receiving something that I didn't get, or asking to do something that all my friends were doing and my father refusing because he was rather strict to give permission. And I would whine and say, "But that's not fair." And my father would always say, "Where on earth, Jennifer, did you ever get the idea that life is fair?" My father had learned early that life isn't fair and don't expect it to be. At age 9 to 14 years, his father was absent because my grandfather was away in World War II in the Dental Corps in the Mediterranean in Italy. And at 18, his best friends, who were allowed to go on a trip through the U.S. before they were going to enter into their first year of university, and my grandmother made my father stay at home because he'd just come back as a camp counselor and he'd already been away at home for the whole summer, so she said, "Nope, you can't go on the trip." And then word came that these promising young men were tragically killed outright in a car accident because one of them fell asleep at the wheel. And my father always blamed himself, thinking, if I had gone on the trip, maybe I would have been the one that was awake. So my father wanted to prepare me for the reality that life is not fair. Most of us have learned that there is much in life that isn't fair. You all know it, right? Some people were born into a family that lives in a dirt floor shack in Kenya, while others are born into a famous Hollywood family that lives in California or in Buckingham Palace. Some people are born to parents who are so excited to have a child that they have gone to great lengths to have one and to pour all that they have, all their love, into their children, while other children are born to someone who didn't want them, and they are painfully neglected. Some people are born with amazing brilliance, while others are born to addicts and struggle with the effects of FAS and school and life become a challenge all their lives because their neurology doesn't work as well as others. Some people are born with tremendous talent that they've been able to cultivate through practice and hard work, while others search all their lives trying to find what's something good, something that I'm really good at. Some people are born with all their limbs and health, while others are born with severe disabilities, physical, mental, or emotional. The young man at 18, who has all the potential in the world, discovers life isn't fair when he's diagnosed with schizophrenia, and his life is forever altered. Or the man discovers that life isn't fair when he's passed over for a promotion by someone who has far less experience or skill. Or the young mother discovers life isn't fair when she learns she has breast cancer. Everyone in this room has learned this third given: life is not fair. I'd like to show you a movie clip about an educator who spends his time teaching young people about white privilege and demonstrating to these young people that life is much fairer for some than for others, and so we need to be aware of life's unfairness and even it out a little bit.
Hey, line up! Line up! Everybody line up! We're about to race! Everybody line up! Shoulder to shoulder, take off your backpacks. Basketball, line up, we're about to race. Hey, we are racing for a $100 bill. The winner of this race will take this. A $100 bill. Before I say go, I'm gonna make a couple statements. If those statements apply to you, I want you to take two steps forward. If those statements don't apply to you, I want you to stay right where you're at. Take two steps forward if both of your parents are still married. Take two steps forward if you grew up with a father figure in the home. Take two steps forward if you had access to a private education. Take two steps forward if you had access to a free tutor growing up. Take two steps forward if you've never had to worry about your cell phone being shut off. Take two steps forward if you've never had to help mom or dad with the bills. Take two steps forward if it wasn't because of your athletic ability, you don't have to pay for college. Take two steps forward if you never wondered where your next meal was going to come from. I want you guys up here in the front just to turn around and look. Every statement I've made has nothing to do with anything any of you have done. Has nothing to do with decisions you've made. Everything I have said has nothing to do with what you've done. We all know these people up here have a better opportunity to win this $100. Does that mean these people back here can't race? No. We would be foolish to not realize we've been given more opportunity. We don't want to recognize that we've been given a head start. But the reality is we have. Now, there's no excuse. They still got to run their race. You still got to run your race. But whoever wins this $100, I think it'd be extremely foolish of you not to utilize that and learn more about somebody else's story. Because the reality is, if this was a fair race and everybody was back on that line, I guarantee you some of these black dudes would smoke all of you. And it's only because you have this big of a head start that you're possibly going to win this race called life. That is a picture of life, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing you've done has put you in the lead that you're in right now. When I say go, On your mark. Get set. Go. If you didn't learn anything from this activity, you're a fool.
In the United Church of Canada, we are very well aware that life is more fair for some than others. And so we strive to try to make life fairer. As David Rico points out in his book, just because life isn't fair doesn't mean we can't be fair. When we become aware of the injustices and inequities and unfairness of life, we are invited into helping life be fair for those who are experiencing an injustice. Whether that is an injustice against our planet and learning how to be fair to it so it can be clean and breathe easier and survive for the next generations, or whether we act more fairly by helping to change governmental policies and laws that protect the rights of all, not just for some, or whether it's standing up for someone who's being mistreated or accompanying a friend who's experiencing an injustice. These are all ways that we as people of faith can respond to unfairness. Last week, Knox hosted Coldest Night of the Year, and altogether that event raised $33,000 for the Island Care Crisis Society that helps support women suffering from domestic violence, seeking to make life more fair. This past Friday, during World Day of Prayer, 90 people from different Christian churches in Parksville, Qualicum gathered to pray for the country of Suriname. And all of our monies collected go to help the people of that tiny country in the top of South America in their struggles for better education and the preservation of their land, seeking to make life more fair for the people of Suriname. You and I are called upon to make life more fair. That's what it means to bear fruit. And what about those times when life isn't fair to us? When life's unfairness towards us hits us hard? How do we learn to wrestle with that given that life isn't fair? As we learned in our Enneagram workshop yesterday, depending on our personalities, we will respond to life's unfairness in certain ways. Some might become vindictive and revengeful, angry and bitter or judgmental about life's unfairness. Or some of us might become anxious and fearful about life's unfairness and be waiting for the next crisis to hit, or choose to pretend it didn't really happen at all and to ignore it altogether. Or we might respond to life's unfairness by trying to overcome our feelings of shame, that maybe we were the cause of life's unfairness and we deserved it somehow, and begin to believe that this unfairness was perhaps our fault. However we react or think about it, as David Rico says, we can either give in to being bitter, or like these young men, some of them didn't even run the race of life. Did you see it? They kind of gave up before they could even get started. He said, we can give up or become bitter or resentful or full of shame or anxious, or we can become better by letting the unfairness do its transformation of us. In the Gospel of John, which Betty just read for us today, which is a very different account of Jesus' life compared to Matthew, Mark, and Luke, it takes place just after Jesus has entered Jerusalem on the day that would be his last Passover. And he has surmised, looking at the lay of the land, that things are not going to go well for him in Jerusalem, that they stone prophets, They kill people who try to speak out against injustices, who overturn tables. And some Greeks come seeking to talk to Jesus. And Jesus tells his disciples that he's going to have to undergo some considerable injustices and unfairness. And he argues with his disciples and says, "Do you think that I should pray to my Father and somehow miraculously ask to escape this terrible unfairness?" And he says, "No, that's why I have come. Because unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains just a single seed. But if it dies, it will bear much fruit." Sometimes we need to die to the need for life to be fair and just let go into the experience of the unfairness, of the darkness, and see what God will do with us in the process of it. He's saying that if the darkness of life overcomes us, sometimes it's okay just to allow it to do so. But don't give up, don't despair, because something miraculous and unexpected is going to emerge from it. Jesus' image of the seed in the darkness reminds us that the seed that falls into the earth is covered in darkness purposefully. That the seed that is planted can only be grown in darkness. And it's in being in the darkness that forces it to grow and push up and reach towards the light. The seed has to find the strength to grow in the darkness and push through and break forth like the bulb in the springtime, to find the strength to push heavenward toward the light and become children of the light. As David Rico writes in his book, "In an immature spiritual consciousness, we might pray, 'Save me from the givens of life.'" In a mature spiritual consciousness, we pray, "God, be with me in the givens of life that I can handle them. Stay with me in them rather than abrogate them, because I don't want to miss out on all they can teach me." This is so reminiscent of our scripture today of Jesus saying, "This is why I have come, to undergo this human experience of unfairness, so God can do something with me and through me and for others." Like the pearl in the oyster that is refined through the grinding of the sand, like the clay pot that is refined and made exquisite in the fire of the kiln, like the seed that is grown only in the dark, so that our soul can be transmuted and made translucent through the unfair experiences of life. When we have the courage to let go and sink into the darkness and trust that we will eventually emerge from this experience of unfairness and brokenness stronger, braver, renewed, and more whole than before. In her book, Ruining You, Nicole Reed writes, "Sometimes the bad things that happen in our lives put us directly on the path to the best things that will ever happen to us." I'd like to share with you the trailer from the movie Wonder. How many of you saw the movie Wonder when it was playing in Nanaimo or Calgary, wherever? It's a story of a young boy named Augie who is born with a severe deformity. It's called Treacher-Collins. And Augie has Treacher-Collins, and so he's born with all these facial deformities, and he has trouble breathing, and so they have to he has to undergo over 20 surgeries to correct his vision and his hearing and his capacity to breathe and survive. And still, even after all those surgeries, none of them have been cosmetic, and he's left with a face looking more like a scary Halloween mask than a human face. And in an effort to protect him from the cruel comments of the world, his parents homeschool him. And then finally, in grade 5, they decide that their son needs to face the world with his face, knowing life will be unfair to Augie, but allowing him to undergo the experience of people's judgment and unfairness, they allow their son to become the best version of himself. And in the face of unfairness, he continues to be fair and kind. And he learns that not only is he more resilient than he ever knew, but he teaches the children of his school that there is an amazing, wise, and courageous soul underneath the strange face that he bears.
My name is Augie Pullman. Next week, I start 5th grade. And since I've never been to real school before, I'm pretty much totally petrified.
I'll see you later.
Augie, you don't want to walk up with your parents because it's not cool.
But you're cool.
I know I am, but technically most dads aren't. And neither are these helmets.
Dear God, please make them be nice to him.
I know I'm not an ordinary 10-year-old kid. I've had 27 surgeries. They've helped me to breathe, to see, to hear without a hearing aid, but none of them have made me look ordinary.
The incubator, Bunsen burners. Oh, and this is an eraser.
You know what an eraser is, right?
Look at his face. I've never seen anything that ugly in my life.
If I looked like him, I'd swear I'd put a hood over my face.
I know you don't always like it, but I love it. It's my son's face.
You are not ugly, Augie.
You just have to say that because you're my mom.
Because I'm your mom, it counts the most, because I know you the most.
Hi, you don't have to do this.
I don't know what you're talking about, Augie.
You don't have to pretend is all I'm saying.
Augie!
Okay, I'm really sorry. Why are you sitting here then?
Because I want some nice friends for a change.
Me too.
Who is it that I aspire to be? That is the question that we should be asking ourselves all the time.
Hey, Jack, come sit here.
In a sec. Like to be able to control the weather.
That would be your superpower? That sounds pretty lame.
What would you do?
I'd be invisible.
You're the toughest kid in that school. Show them.
You can't blend in when you were born to stand out.
You ever thought about having plastic surgery?
Dude, this is after plastic surgery. It takes a lot of work to look this good.
Last Tuesday in this sanctuary, we celebrated the life of Lorraine Thompson. All of us would consider what Lorraine went through with her 6-year struggle with ALS completely unfair. It wasn't fair that such an active, talented, full of life woman lost her life bit by bit until she could not move a muscle except to blink her eyes. But in spite of being completely immobilized in a hospital bed in their family dining room with Clay looking tenderly after her and a whole team of loving friends looking after her right up until her last breath, Lorraine was lying there reflecting on her life. And she was reflecting on all the wonderful, wondrous experiences of her life. And 18 months ago when I met Lorraine and I asked her how she coped with the unfairness of her situation, she responded by sending me an email in which she wrote, painstakingly, letter by letter, with a slight movement, all that was left for her to move. She wrote to me that during her active life, she had the opportunity for many wonderful experiences. And now she looked at this time, this chapter in her life, as an opportunity to be more reflective. ALS gave her the gift of deepening and becoming the contemplative she had studied with Foster in the course on mystics. Her first and last words of her own 7-page eulogy that she painstakingly typed out, one agonizing letter at a time, began and ended with these words: "It was a party." Lorraine didn't focus on the unfairness of her life, and I'm sure there were lots of moments when she did. But she focused instead on the glory that came shining through. Just as Jesus prays to God, "Glorify me," and God responds faithfully to Jesus, "I have glorified you, and I will glorify you again." The word glory is referring in Hebrew is called the Shekinah, the Shekinah, the radiance of our souls, the shining essence of our truest selves. Some people see it and call it our auras. Jesus shone. His true soul essence shone in his transfiguration, and God promises him this day that his Shekinah, the glory of God, the radiance of his soul, will shine at his death in his resurrection. That same glory of God that shone forth in Jesus, that shone forth in Augie, and all of his friends noticed it, and that shone forth in Lorraine Thompson, also promises to shine forth in each one of us when we have the courage to let go and be in the darkness and let God do amazing things with us in that place. Life is not fair, and we can either respond by getting bitter or better, by dying to our egos to become the fullness, the completeness, the wholeness of our souls. Like Jesus, like Augie, like Lorraine, may each of us have the courage to choose to become the truth of our soul's radiant Shekinah, the glory of God. May it be so. Amen.